CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstudge, the radio show about comics out of UBC in Vancouver. It's about 2:05. That was His Hair off the wonderful album Think Along with Mad, a classic for any kid to have. I love it. My guest today is Craig Yao, the man behind the ARF series of books from Fantagraphics, as well as the unauthorized clean cartoonist Dirty Drawings from Last Gasp. And then I guess as a follow-up publication from Abrams next year will be the Joe Shuster doing naughty, naughty stuff. So how you doing, Craig?
Terrific. How about you?
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks for taking your time on your busy schedule to join the wonderful studs.
The pleasure is all mine.
So I guess I'll start out with a question about who you are and where you come from. Before you start doing the ARF books, you have quite a history on doing books about related stuff. So
mm-hmm.
What's some background info on you?
Well, I grew up in the Midwest in the U.S. of A. And, you know, one of my pleasures back then as a kid was reading comics, and I just kind of never stopped. And even early on, I started publishing, you know, I stole the school mimeograph machine and started publishing fanzines in my basement about comics and cartoonists. And, you know, I not only love comics, but the history of them, too. So, I always wrote that about that since I was a teenager. And, you know, started a amassing big stacks of comic books to fill my bedroom and
more rooms,
into,
I presume.
Scrooge would, McDuck would dive into his bins of books. I would dive into my stacks of comic books when I was a kid. So I just never stopped. Most people grew up and stopped playing with toys, but I invent toys, and most people stopped reading comic books at a certain point, and I just plowed on through, and I guess now even intellectuals and beautiful young women and, European scholars and everybody else reads comics, but when I was a teenager, that was a forbidden activity. You didn't tell your friends because you'd worry they'd make fun of you. Certainly, you want the opposite sex to find out because they would really disdain you for that activity. But I just kept reading comics. I couldn't stop. So what else do you want to know?
What's, like, your professional history? So you work on a whole bunch of different interesting projects. You worked for Jim Henson for quite a while, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about a little
bit
about that.
Well, as I said, one of the things I did was I invented toys. I was the senior designer at the world's largest toy think tank in Chicago. It's called Marvin Glass and Associates. They invented a lot of toys like Light Bright and Rock'em Sock'em Robots and the game Simon, a lot of baby boomer kind of things. I was working there, and around that time, I did a bunch of Muppet toys. Got to know the people from the Muppets, and Jim Henson himself took a shine to me and kept inviting me to come work for him. And I was having so much fun at this toy think tank that I kind of said, "Gee, I'm flattered, but I'm going to have to pass." But he finally made an offer I couldn't refuse, and I left Chicago to go to New York and work for Jim. And I was his creative director, and then he made me vice president, general manager, / creative director of his company.
Wow.
And, worked on everything from movies to TV shows to the Muppet attraction at Walt Disney World, and just had a hell of a good time. And obviously working with Jim was quite inspirational and fun and, fascinating, a great learning experience too. So when he passed on, I decided his death really kind of wigged me out, and I wanted a change, and so I decided to leave the Muppets and open up my own studio, and kind of haven't looked back since. I mean, I did a lot of work for Disney and Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network and MTV and even straight companies like Microsoft and Campbell Soup. So, usually fun stuff when they want to reach out with wackier, funner, creative things. My studio often gets called on, and we work on cool projects for companies like that. But then my first love is still comics and writing about comics and creating comics. I'm a cartoonist too, so I keep coming back to doing that at least in my spare time.
So ARF is really a labor of love.
Definitely. I love it, and it's a labor. It's a lot of work, but obviously a lot of fun to put together. And I don't know if your listeners have seen the ARF books, but they're like, kind of histories of comics and cartoonists, but I unearth things that many people have never seen before, really rare stuff and really wild stuff that from the past that people are totally unaware of, So, it's like really kind of, a lot of it's very surreal and wacky and weird. The material from, anywhere from the early 1800s to the, usually I kind of cut it off around the 1960s. I think that.
Around the beginning of Marvel.
The 1960s are, to me, my favorite period in comics.
It seems like with ARF, it's something that both comic aficionados like myself, as well as those that aren't really necessarily drawn into the comic thing, but find something interesting to be able to engage in too. Is that kind of a purposeful thing?
I'm always thinking about writing and designing the book for non-comics fans. It's probably not just necessarily the average person on the street would fall into it, but I try to design it for like people who are interested in popular culture or graphic arts or designers or you know, people outside of the comic ghetto, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I even have put it in the hands of people who are just rank and file civilians, they seem to be intrigued by, you know, I feel some really interesting cartoonists that, you know, the common person can look at and go, wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems you're able to kind of pull in the real, like one of the covers says, it's the unholy marriage of arts and comics, where you're able to pull in some of that more arty stuff that really kind of, in the comics crowd, it's off-putting for some, but for here it works so well together.
I've always been interested in the relationship between fine art and comics. And I always hear cartoonists say that the lines are blurring, and I think they are, especially in the last decade. But
I think the lines...
fine art crowd is still kind of at arm's length to wholly embrace comics. I mean, but the Masters, what was it, Masters of Comics show that started in L.A. and toured a couple museums last year, I think was a big start, and I'm trying to tap into the same vein, and I was pretty excited when I went to the Museum of Modern Art a couple of months ago, and in the bookstore they had a real nice display of the ARF books, and I feel like, yeah, there we go, you know, there's some acceptance, and, it was a little bit of a thrill for me.
Well, at the Vancouver Art Gallery, we currently have the Crazy Show. I don't know if you've heard about it.
No.
It's a whole mess of different pop culture art. So there's manga, anime, cartoons.
Oh.
Comics and graphic novels, quote-unquote, is two separate things. And the comics and graphic novel part was curated by Seth and Spiegelman.
Oh, great.
And so there's Milt Gross stuff in there, and I think your latest ARF book was one of the few like really good things on Milt Gross right now, so there's stacks of them there.
Oh, great.
So in the very prestigious Vancouver Art Gallery.
Oh, very good.
So, and we'll get into Milt Gross later, because in Vancouver, it's really important right now, because we have pages from You've Done Her Wrong that people can go and look at, like actual original art.
Original art from He Done Her Wrong?
Yeah.
No kidding, that's great.
As well as, you know, original Harrimans and a whole bunch of original Kurtzmans and all sorts of fabulous folks. And then, you know, newer guys like Seth and Spiegelman and Klaus and all sorts of wonderment.
Well, that's great. I think right now kind of my number one personal passion is collecting old original art.
That's something I noticed going through the ARFs, is half the stuff is from the author's collection.
Yeah, no, so, I've kind of amassed a lot of stuff, and I was getting this before when it was a little more affordable. You know, I kind of started early on when I was a kid, and I was trying to kind of keep ahead of the game by like identifying art and artists that maybe hadn't become
haven't
popular
peaked yet?
Or, in other words, expensive yet, you know,
mm-hmm.
My whole living room is a tribute to George Harriman, who drew Crazy Cat. And so I got all originals in my living room by him, and then in my bedroom, it's an all Winsor McCay bedroom, because he dealt a lot with dream sequences and surrealism and just, you know, the whole either nightmares or people who ate too much rare bit, or the dreams of Little Nemo, his signature character. So I have originals of those in my bedroom. I thought that was apropos. And, you know, and then just around the rest of the house, you know, I do have Kurtzmans and Milt Gross, and just, so it's just, to me, it really helps just to walk around my home, it helps inspire me, you know, for the work I do, and, you know, I get a lot of enjoyment out of that. So.
Well, one of the things I've noticed that's worked in some of the articles coming up is that it seems like you've gone hunting for art and looked through weird spots and found your neat art that you didn't know who it was, and then you'd follow up and find out more about that person and get even further intrigued.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of serendipity kind of discoveries, and when you start, you know, diving into the history of comics and cartoonists, and one guy will lead to another, or you read an interview with some cartoonist, and he says or she says they were influenced by so and so. So then that makes me want to explore that person's work, or, you know, I find a stack of old magazines from the turn of the century, and all of a sudden I, you know, just. You know, there really were hundreds and thousands of cartoonists in the world, and many of them, there's many greats that have been completely forgotten, and all of a sudden you just, like, find the tip of the iceberg on some guy's or gal's career, and, you know, it makes me hunger to find more and learn more about the person. And then eventually, you know, if I've amassed enough and it seems right, I like to share this art I've collected or these printed examples I found from these cartoons. I like to share it in the art book, so they're very kind of eclectic that way, you know. But I think there's a common thread that ties them all together. I go for the cartoonists that like to really kind of work wild, you know. They like to do wacky things and weird things, and
you also like
surprising things.
And you like the pinups?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's enough interest in sex by and from contemporary cartoonists, and in my own work, I try to put a lot of sex in there. And I remember years ago, I met Robert Crumb in France and showed him my work, and he told me he really loved it, which was obviously a real thrill, another thrill in my life, and obviously a great encouragement. And I was humbled by the masters saying my work had some merit, and. But he did advise me to put more sex into it. So obviously he follows his own advice on that realm, and I thought that kind of rang true to me. Is I thought, like, yeah, sex does seem an important topic to explore in cartoons. So both in my personal cartooning, I explore that, and in the art books, I like to do it by having you know, a chapter each volume, you know, about one of the old great pinup cartoonists, as I call them.
One that I really enjoyed looking at was Kremos.
Oh, yeah, Kremos.
Kremos.
His real name is Niso Ramponi. When he was in the war, he wasn't allowed to moonlight, and so he had an agent, friend of his, pretend he was a cartoonist named Kremos. So this agent would, pretending he was a cartoonist, would go to different publishers and sell Niso's work. And actually, when he got out of the army and could go to the publishers himself, he and this agent had a bit of a fight over who owned the right to the name Kremos and who was really doing the artwork. So he kind of proved it to this publisher they were both trying to get work from, that, you know, they met in his office, and Kremos sat down, and this other guy sat down, and they both drew a picture of a sexy girl, and obviously Kremos was won this pissing contest, because obviously he's one of the masterful.
It's like the Judgment of Solomon.
Great master female depictors of all time. Yeah, but Kremos is really awesome. I love his work, and just amazing pinups. I can't remember which ARF book that was in right now. But
that was in the ARF forum.
Yeah, ARF forum. So if anyone's interested in sexy cartooning, they should pick up ARF forum, because I think the Kremos work is amazing. And in good news, I'm going to be doing a Kremos book for Fantagraphics, the same publisher of
ARF.
So
you never have a shortage of books coming out.
Yeah, no, I'm working on them. It's funny, I finished a book the other day, And I thought, like, gee, I better look at my list to see what more books I have to do. And I think there was, like, over 10 books on my to-do list here that, you know, I actually have contracts for. So, and lots of deadlines, lots of looming deadlines. So, well, any one time, I'm working on two or three books at once.
Like, outside, before, even without the ARF books, you've got, like, you did an ARF book on Mickey Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
What else was there? I was trying to look on your website earlier before the
show.
Well,
similar to the Mickey Mouse book, there was a book called The Art of Barbie, which was kind of the same vein. The Art of Mickey Mouse, the concept was I got about 100 artists from around the world to do their own interpretation of Mickey Mouse. So I, you know, had everybody from, you know, the Seymour Schwass to, you know, the great illustrator and designer to Michael Jackson doing a doodle of Mickey Mouse, and I didn't even have to sleep with Michael to get that.
I think you're a little old for him.
Yeah, I'm a little old for him, yeah, that's probably true. And so, you know, like Saul Bass, the designer who drew, who designed all the openings for the Hitchcock movies, and Robert Crumb and Peter Max and all these different people did their interpretation of Mickey, and the book was quite successful. It was published in France, and another edition in Germany, and another edition in Japan. In fact, there was a big art exhibit of the work from that book, which I own a lot of the artwork. And so, in Japan, Nine Cities hosted a touring museum show of artwork from that book. And Mattel heard about this Art of Mickey Mouse book and asked me to do a similar book on Barbie. And so, in fact, that's going to be reissued soon, because I did that about, oh, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years ago. But it's going to be reissued again and finally have the original introduction. The introduction for the Art of Mickey Mouse book was by John Updike. And for the Art of Barbie, we got an interesting person, Demi Moore, to write the introduction, but at some point my editor at the time thought she wasn't literary enough, so we dropped Demi Moore, which I always thought was a big mistake in retrospect. And so I'm kind of excited now that we're going to reissue the book. We're finally going to have Demi Moore's introduction, so that'll be kind of fun. But for the part of Barbie, I'm not like a giant Barbie fan, but I found it an interesting subject. And again, I was able to get a lot of cartoonists. Like for the Art of Mickey Mouse, I had like Jack Kirby and different cartoonists like that. And for the Art of Barbie, I have, you know, cartoonists. In fact, again, you'll find that I really love Italian cartoonists. So I had asked Grimos to draw Barbie, and he kind of didn't feel that he could pull it off or something. He had some self-doubts that I don't know why. But eventually, I thought he never did anything, but I learned that he did a sketch for the assignment, and which he never sent to me. And so I did eventually publish it in the chapter on Grimos in the ARF books when his daughter gave that as a present to me when I met her. So I have a lot of different cartoonists in the Art of Barbie, which kind of made the project interesting to me. So, what else? What else can I tell you?
I was thinking I can do a quick song break, because we're almost at half past.
You want me to sing a song?
No, don't worry. I thought I'd give you a breathing break and play a song.
Oh, so you're going to play a song.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds like a good plan.
I'm thinking, you want some more Mad or maybe some Spike Jones?
Spike Jones is a fave.
Okay, how about Clink Clink Another Drink?
Perfect.
Okay. We'll be right back. This is Ink Studs with Craig Yao. We'll be right back.
in the cellar when it's gone.
Drink, drink, the glasses clink,
making tinkly music till the dawn is breaking.
Clang, clang, who cares a dang?
What's the difference when you're on a spree? Over the teeth, behind the gums, look out, stomach, here she comes.
I have another drink on me. Gurgle, 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 gurgle. Gurgle, 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 gurgle. Trickle, 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 trickle. Slice of cheese and bite of pickle. Doesn't even cost a nickel now to wash it down.
Whoa! Clink, clink, no more to drink. I had a cellar full, but now it's gone. Drink, drink, the glasses clink. Like the anvil chorus, and my head is splitting. A breaky, a busty. Oh, brother. Oh, ow. What do I do now? Pink elephants are running after me. Though that stuff was smooth as silk, from now on I'll stick to milk. Nothing else to drink for me.
Do people really hiccup that much when they drink? I've never had that problem.
I know I do. That was a great choice. It was a good song. I think Spike Jonze, like, to me, he like is like musical representation of cartooning or something. Plus, a song about drinking. Most cartoonists are luscious, so.
Just look at good old Wally Wood, who is featured in your book, The Clean Artist Doing... Or clean cartoonist, dirty drawings.
Right, yeah. Even though Wood was definitely, drank way too much, as did many cartoonists. I'm actually going to do a whole chapter on the subject of cartoonists and drink in the next ARF book, because a lot of cartoonists did great cartoons about that subject, and a lot of them did drink a lot. And I think some of their cartoons seem like their representation of DT's... happening right on the paper, so I think it's going to be a pretty fun chapter.
Neat. Well, I can definitely see more that aspect when it was an old boys club.
Yeah. They say, cartooning has a lot of its roots in journalism, and a lot, journalists in the past have certainly always been known to be pretty hard drinkers, and I think a lot of cartoonists and journalists kept pretty stiff liquor in the drawers of their desks and drawing.
Nowadays you get fired for that.
Yeah, that's probably true. Back then they got fired up with...
Alright, I'm ready for the new story. Comic ARF, the latest in the ARF series, which is, 80% devoted to Milt Gross?
It's a good portion of it, yep.
So, tell me, people, about the interesting... You start out the book, doesn't really start with necessarily a proper table of contents and stuff. It just jumps right into this neat experimentation that you've gathered people together for.
I'm pretty damn excited about this. I feel like it's one of the, if you don't mind my lack of humility, I think I was able to, through the kindness of others, orchestrate one of the coolest comic events ever, in that... Here's the deal. Milt Gross, this brilliant genius, so totally wacky cartoonist of the 1920s and 30s and on into the 40s, in the late 20s and early 30s, he did a strip. It was called Draw Your Own Conclusions. What it was three panels, and then Milt left the last panel or square blank for amateur cartoonists to send in their idea for the solution to his setup. And these cartoonists' winning entries would be printed in a magazine, and they would win a $25 prize, which was pretty good money during the Depression. And and the excitement of seeing their work in print. So I love these strips, and There was about 70-some of them, and I decided to send those to contemporary, like, big-name cartoonists and have them complete the strips. And so, I was able to get, like, Robert Crumb, my hero, and Art Spiegelman, and Patrick McDonald, and Bill Keane, who does Family Circus, and Mort Walker, who does Beetle Bailey, and, just a who's who of contemporary cartoonists, Sergio Aragonés to Seymour Schwast, and, Peter Bagg, and, the list just goes on and on. Did you have some favorites that you dug in there?
I'd say probably one of my favorites was Sergio's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, his style, I mean, it is so perfect to go with it. I mean, him and Robert Sikoriak's, I mean, Sikoriak's always fantastic.
Oh, yeah, he always does brilliant stuff.
It's, the most consummate, I don't know what the best way to describe his art is someone else's art, but it's just so perfect.
Yeah, and I was able to get Dennis Kitchen and Johnny Ryan and Dean Eagle and Mark Beyer and Glenn Head and Sam Henderson and
L. Jeff A.
Hunt Emerson was there, and Mark Newgarden did a great ending to Milk Gross's strip. Did you just say Al Jaffe?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I was so thrilled to have him. He was always a hero of mine growing up, reading Mad Magazine, so to have Al in there was pretty cool. Ivan Brunetti's in there, and Bill Griffith. And
yourself.
Ah, yes. Myself and Jules Pfeiffer almost, and Matt Groening.
Oh yeah,
must add. So
I love it. It's so diverse. I think Mike Mignola's in there too, isn't he?
Yeah,
like that one kind of came out of left field. I mean, Mike's great. I love his stuff.
No, he's brilliant. But I saw him at the San Diego convention. He was hounding me because I hadn't sent him the art that he hadn't seen yet. But at any rate, I told him he was my token.
Mainstream
guy, and he. He pretty sardonically said, he thanked me for helping keep him, cool in the eyes of the public. There he was, just with seeing him at the same time as in the theaters was his, Hellboy movie. So I think he's probably running circles around the other people who think they're cool.
Yeah.
In the realm of coolness.
No, I've always loved his stuff for years, and it's nice.
Oh,
to
yeah,
see.
Fantastic.
Nice to see him getting a paycheck.
To have him in there.
So tell me about your love for Milt Gross, because I mean, like I said, there's a lot of focus on Milt in this particular.
Well,
volume.
Milt Gross, I just think was brilliant in that he was like really breaking the rules. I mean, I still think he's incredible and outshining. A million other cartoonists, contemporaries included, but, now there's, I think, a much more diversification of styles, and there is more loose styles happening amongst people, though I've got my own kind of beef about that, which I'd be happy to tell you about. We could rant about that for a couple hours, but he had this very, very loose style and wacky style and break-all-the-rules style and just really out there kind of approach, and I think he was like one of the very first to take such a have such a rambunctious, loud, weirdo kind of a take on cartooning, and I just really love him. So he's a real groundbreaker in that way, and just funny as hell. He's the kind of stuff you read that you respond by laughing out loud. I mean, his stuff was just wild in its technique, but just really tickled you to read. It's just to laugh out loud, funny business. He didn't call himself a cartoonist; he called himself a comicker. And I think the comic part really comes across. I mean, even if you'll see looking at volume of ARF, comic ARF, see a photo of him, and he looks like Charlie Chaplin, and he, in fact,
he does. He looks strikingly like Charlie Chaplin. When Charlie's doesn't have his makeup when he's just being himself, and his hair has gone all kind of crazy and gray. And
yeah. So, you know, he had this same kind of early silent film, Ben Turpin, Charlie Chaplin, Harold Lloyd kind of sensibilities that he put into his comics. And a very, of course, if you're familiar with his work, you'll know that he as a Jew, was very influenced by the whole Yiddish kind of approach to humor and life, and a lot of his early work is in dialect, and you know, it takes a little work to read it, but it's because it's pretty heavy dialect, but it really probably politically incorrect in some circles.
That's funny.
But it's worth the effort because you're rewarded with lots of laughs and guffaws.
Looking at him, it kind of reminds me a bit of Will Elder, and that seems just like he's having so much fun just by the photos.
I wouldn't be surprised if Elder and Kurtzman were very influenced by Milk Gross, for sure. Yeah, no, you've really pegged it. I think you really, you get that he's having fun while he's drawing it, and the fun that, you know, translates to you as the reader. So, you know, I was honored because I know a lot of the artists who contribute, you know, drawing their own conclusion for Gross's strip of that name. I was honored that such a incredible roster of people responded, and many of them did tell me they loved the ARF books, but I think they were really not responding to ARF or to me so much, but to Milk Gross himself, the idea that they got to collaborate with this fucking genius. You know, you know, they just really liked this high concept, and you know, they were thrilled to, you know, to actually collaborate with Milk Gross. You know, I mean, you know, lots of artists like to collaborate, especially these days with other artists. But to have the chance, and this wasn't something contrived. This is something Milk Gross wanted cartoonists to do.
Mm-hmm.
He did the setup, and you know, they did the last panel. So you know, I think. The cartoonists had a lot of fun with it, and in fact, this has been so popular. We're going to now do a whole book. Like I said before, there was 77, I think, of these draw your own conclusion strips. So if there's any cartoonists listening out there, they should contact me, because now I'm right in the middle now of starting to draft some more cartoonists, and I've already gotten Linda Berry has said she's going to do one. Ralph Bakshi and Jim Steranko.
I want to see a Ralph Steadman draw your own conclusion.
I hadn't thought. I love his work, so I would love to see if we can draft him for this. And if people do have other ideas of artists they think we should have for this.
I know Gary's in touch with them, so.
Yeah, definitely. I'll see if Gary Groth can
hook a brother up. Now,
yeah.
More on the art discussion of actually one more question of the Milk Gross stuff. When you sent the artist the draw your own conclusions, did you kind of pick and choose which page you'd give them, or do you give them like a stack to choose from?
Well, it's interesting, you know, every artist is unique and different, has their own personality and their own approach, that's for sure. Some of the artists wanted me to choose one for them. I don't know whether they're lazy or they're just more used to working with an art director who has, you know, has more control over a project, or and other artists, I just let them see the whole, you know, everything that was available that they could choose from, and you know, and they chose particular ones. And I try to coordinate it so that no one would choose the same strip. As soon as somebody chose one, I took it down off this little website I created for the artist to go look at the available Milk Gross strips. And but somehow there was a mix-up where Art Spiegelman and Patrick McDonald did the same strip. And, you know, first I was thinking, oh, no, you know, they're going to be annoyed and the readers are going to be annoyed. But both Spiegelman and McDonald, I think, they didn't have any problems at all with it. And the readers and myself have enjoyed looking at, like, two very different interpretations, you know, of the same Milk Gross Draw Your Own Conclusion strip. So, like, they both have very different endings that are very much true to their personalities, and Patrick's is brilliant and funny, and But Spiegelman's is a little more dark and psychological, and you know, they're both geniuses in their own ways, and certainly they did it their own ways and had their drew their own conclusions. And so to have those kind of duplicate setups and then very different punchlines by
because they're completely different.
Two giants was a little fascinating exercise.
They're completely different cartoonists, so it's really interesting to see what.
Yeah.
The different directions they can go in.
Yeah.
Fine art.
You know what? Can I say one more thing about Gross before we move
course.
On? Of course. I'm pretty excited about the cover of Comic Garf because it is
a pretty
fascinating painting that Milk Gross did during the 30s. And what did it? We'll try to describe it for your listeners. It's a bunch of foreigners. Stepping onto the shores of the U.S. of A., and Uncle Sam is there with a giant Uncle Sam is there with a giant meat grinder grinding these people up. And out of the meat grinder is coming all these classic cartoon comic strip characters, from Barney Google to Popeye to Crazy Cat and Mutt and Jeff and Cash and Jammer Kids. So, you know, it's kind of like a political cartoon that people coming onto the shores are... You know, you're looking, people are called the right kind of immigrants. And when they ground up, when they're coming out of the meat grinder, they're labeled the useful American citizens. So I don't think there's anything more useful than Popeye and Crazy Cat. Happy Hook.
Well, I was
able to score that painting a couple of years ago, and that's one of my favorite pieces. Original art in my collection, and I just got it back a couple days ago because the Norman Rockwell Museum had borrowed it for about a year. So I had really, really missed it. So I'm looking at it here right now as we're talking, and so I wanted to say something about that. I think it's a pretty cool cover because it seems like it's ripped out of today's headlines. You know, it's all about the subject of immigration.
Well, the interesting thing is that a lot of the early cartoonists were immigrants as well, or from immigrant families, like second generation.
Yeah,
Americans.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think Milk Gross was, and I mean, early Germans and Jews, and many of the cartoonists had these kind of ethnic backgrounds that I think made comics rich and full. And, you know, and certainly was a boon to the comic strip world. It's fun, though, isn't it, to see Milk Gross's interpretation of all these classic comic characters?
No, I love it. It's a fabulous, and it's such a, and it just pops. It's such warm colors, too.
Yeah, it's got that nice red background. Yeah.
So, like I was alluding to before, fine art is a big part of what you do, kind of creating those connections with comics. And there's three people in particular, which I kind of want to talk about as much as we can. Picasso, Dali, and then the Lichtenstein. Picasso being the first. Tell me about his interest in comics and his love of comics and how that worked for him and how that's important.
Well, I just mentioned the Katzenjammer Kids, and that was one of his favorite comic strips. And in fact, it's said that, when he couldn't... get copies of the newspaper that Gertrude Stein would call him up on intercontinental telephone and read in the latest Katzenjammer Kids comics. And, so I think he was very, very influenced by comics. And, in fact, I mean, it doesn't look so wild to us now, but his painting of Gertrude Stein in 1906 was really groundbreaking and very cartoony in its approach compared to all the other paintings that, you know, in the art world that preceded that one. And so, they said that he was really laboring trying to capture her like he wanted to, but he was probably all of a sudden kind of channeled the comics, and even maybe was thinking about Mama Katzenjammer when he painted Gertrude's portrait, and so that was very influential. And he also went on to, during his even more Cubist period, he went on to do some comics or some artwork that was, seems very comics oriented. He did sequential pictures, and his anti-war lithographs are very much set up like a like a comic strip page. The particular one, The Dream and Life of Franco in 1937, really looks like some kind of wacky Robert Crumb comic strip, I always thought. And then, when he would write letters to friends or doodle in his sketchbook, sometimes he would have, really draw caricatures and comic-type things and pictures with word balloons coming out of the character's mouth. Picasso was definitely, I think, loved and was also inspired by comics. What's not to love, right?
No, if you don't love comics, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, definitely.
That'll be my my quote for the studs. Now, Dali also.
Yeah, Dali was another guy that was influenced by comics. And and by the way, I think one of the reasons you're talking about this is because I have a whole chapter on Picasso and his relationship to comics and cartoons in the ARF volume called ARF Museum.
Mm-hmm. I should be referencing them better.
Yeah, well, no, we'll work on it together. We have to remember to push those books, or
remember,
Gary Groth and Kim Thompson are going to be, and Eric Reynolds are going to be, people of Fantagraphics are going to be mad at us, right?
This is Ink Studs. We're talking to Craig Yao in the ARF series of books, available from finer comic stores and online at fantagraphics.com.
Oh, that really sounds like a commercial. Are you planning on trying to send them an invoice for that one?
We'll figure out something. I'll just drink all their beer at some party they have.
There we go. Yeah, Dali is another fine artist. I try to pretty much every ARF volume spotlight a fine artist who was either influenced by comics or cartoonists were influenced by them in some significant way, or they actually did comics. And Picasso did some comics, and Dali did some amazing comics that very few people know about, but he did comics. So some of the best ones that he did were he said later, were storyboards for movies, but they're totally done in a comic strip, comic book page type of manner. And so, his surrealism in a comic book form, this is just some of my favorite cartooning ever. Dali is certainly was the master,
and it had a lot of influence on comics folks as well.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of comic book covers, like by, there's a famous Nick Fury Agent Shield cover. Mm-hmm. In the 60s
by Stranko,
by Marvel Comics, by Jim Stranko. It was very Salvador Dali-ish, and certainly when cartoonists dream sequences, like I'm flipping through the latest ARF book, and there was this horror comics artist named Bob Powell who has a real story about hell, and but he uses like some real Salvador Dali motifs, those kind of lines that fade into, go to the background and everything that Dali would use. Cartoons would often have melting clocks and things when they were showing a character dreaming. I think they enjoyed riffing on Salvador Dali. Because Turnabout's fair play. Like I said, he seemed to riff on cartoonists, and they riffed on him. So it worked out pretty cool.
Now, riffing on cartoonists, we'll jump right into Roy Lichtenstein.
Right.
If that's a good segue as any.
I know. Well, most comic book type people, that they seem to kind of hate him, they resent him, but I think he needs to be saluted, and I think some of the acceptance and of comics as an art form, a lot of that has to be attributed to him, because I think by blowing up panels and putting them on canvases and hanging them in museums, all of a sudden people could see, hey, yeah, there is something to this artwork, there is a power to it, there is something strong about these colors and these black outlines and these integration of words and pictures. I think we comic fans don't need to revile him. We need to you know, to honor him, because I think he did a lot to awaken people's knowledge that the comics are indeed art.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a fan. I don't know where you stand on it, but I'm a big fan of Roy's.
I think technically it's quite interesting. We have a couple of Lichtensteins at the Vancouver Art Gallery right now, part of the Crazy Show.
Mm.
And personally, I love melding of culture. I think nothing should be conclusive, but I don't know if I'm completely happy with Lichtenstein's take on the comic stuff.
I love it. In fact, I'm just thinking as you're saying it now, not only do I think we need to thank him for bringing a lot of attention to comics and what a great art form they are and how powerful they are, there's an area that I wish he was getting more across to comic fans is the whole area of romance comics. I find romance comics really fascinating. They were a huge, huge genre for comics publishing at one point.
They were the
biggest,
yeah, the largest at one point in
the
50s.
Yeah, definitely, in the 50s and early 60s, and, you know, where he took many of his panels from to blow up for his canvases.
Alex Toth did his best stuff when it was romance comics.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. And I really wish people would... I wish that was a genre that could be come back again. There's only been like one or two issues over the last 20 years of people attempting to do that. But to me, like, God, it's such a great genre for comics, and it was so well done. I mean, like you say, Alex Toth did brilliant work there. Simon and Kirby did.
Which is funny because Kirby, for the most part, his work can be very ugly and.
Yeah,
you know, harsh, but he does these really soft romance comics at the same time.
Yeah, they were great. They're not my favorite of his work, but maybe I shouldn't even say that because right now I'm trying to tout the idea of more romance comics. I shouldn't say anything negative. Aspirations about them. I think there should be more romance comics, and you know, I wish more people would explore that subject. More publishers would. Try to get behind it. I certainly a lot more women are reading comics than when I was a kid. And there's great women cartoonists now. And,
well, maybe the.
But I think the general populace of women could really get into romance comic books if somebody would just put some money and thought.
Well, couldn't you say that Craig Thompson's Blankets is just one 800-page romance comic?
Oh, yeah.
It's not as kitschy and as fun as, say, some of the Beatnik covers of the melodrama, but it's pretty much a romance comic.
Yeah, I think you're right. So. Here's another guy I'd like to get for the Milk Gross Draw Your Own Conclusions book. Who else? Who do you think that I should get?
Oh, I can. Another time I'll get you a list. I'm not good at on the spot.
All right. Email me. yoecomix@hotmail.com. Yo Comics. yoecomix.
Hear that, folks? Email Craig, and if you want to get in on there, email him and see if you can cut the mustard.
That sounds good.
We only have about 3 minutes left, so.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it's the hour comes up quick.
Time goes fast when you're having fun.
Excellent. On the topic of romance.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about Clean Cartoonist's Dirty Drawing.
Oh, that was a book where I, my whole life I've always been interested in, as I was digging through the annals of cartooning history, I would run across these drawings by mainstream cartoonists of risque and pinuppy and some quite dirty drawings by, big-name cartoonists that they had given to friends of theirs or published in small cartoonist journals, you know, for their cartooning club, you know, cartoonist clubs and like National Cartoon Society and things like that. And so I kept a big file of these kind of comics and cartoons and drawings by animators and newspaper strip artists and mainstream comic book artists. And, you know, I always wanted to do a book and a year ago at San Diego Comic Con. I made up a little mock-up of this idea and was walking by the last gas booth, showed it to Ron Turner, who on the spot said, let's do it. And it's great just to have a publisher that doesn't need to go to his marketing directors and sales team. And
It's pretty much him.
It's him, but though I must quickly add, he turned me on. He has signed the project to his son, Colin Turner, who's just a terrific editor to work with. And next generation of Last Gasp is going to continue on the great tradition Ron started, because Colin's a bright young guy, and he was a joy to work with on that book. So we put together a whole book. So this book features, Bob Kane, who did Batman, and Carl Barks, who did Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck, and Charles Schulz, who, of course, did Peanuts, and Mort Walker, who did Beetle Bailey, and Chuck Jones, who, the guy behind the great Bugs Bunny cartoons we love, and Jack Kirby. And
I got to say, the Jack Kirby one is the most, disturbing.
Which one is disturbing?
The Jack Kirby one.
Oh, yeah.
The weird one with the women in their costumes.
Yeah, that really is. Some of these
it's fantastic.
Mainstream guys weren't used to drawing sexy stuff, and so it does come across as pretty bizarre. I think you're right. Kirby is one of the more disturbing ones.
So everyone looks at it like, oh. But it's fantastic. I highly recommend people check it out.
Yeah, and then speaking of dirty cartoons by mainstream cartoonists, my next book is going to be for Abrams, one of my next books. That's going to totally zero in on Joe Shuster, the co-creator of Superman. I unearthed a whole large amount of work in bondage and pornography that he did, and so I'm going to put together a whole book called this. What's it called? Help me here. It's called Secret Identity, The Fetish Art of Joe Shuster.
There we go.
So that's going to come out next March. So
from Abrams as part of their new comic book line.
Yep.
Or books about comics line. That's the kind of vibe I get from it.
Comics Art, I think, is the name of their new imprint. They've done some great books on comics.
And I have to say,
now they're going to have an old imprint, and this is going to be one of their first and signature books for their new list, which has a lot of other great stuff too.
And on that note, Mark Evanier will be joining us next week to discuss his Kirby book for that publisher.
Kirby book is awesome.
I am at the end of my hour.
Well, gee, I'm getting all misty eyed.
Thank you for joining me so much, Craig.
Oh gosh, sure.
I'm sorry. The boys are all.
We really have to go. Huh?
We have to go.
Oh well.
We're actually overtime today.
Okay. Well, so. Do I get time and a half for overtime?
Time and a half of nothing is. I'll send you a check.
All right, great. I'll be watching for that.
Thank you so much for joining us. And,
my great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm
Take
always
care.
Enjoying your books. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
That was Craig Yao, his series ARF Books from Fantagraphics, as well as Clean Cartoonist, Dirty Drawings from Last Gasp Books, and he does a million other things. Check out his books. ARF Lovers is his main blog site, but it's not up right now, so I think yaostudios.com or yao.com, Y-O-E is the last name, and thank you for joining us, Craig, and Crumbs and Treasons up next. Rhymes and Reasons. Crimes and Treasons. I can't even speak today, can I? Okay. I gotta end this. Thanks, folks.